We're back with Going Public on KRCU, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. The new exhibition, Reconstructed, Reconceptualized, examines the link between the banjo and African string instruments. Ahead of the exhibition's September 1st opening at the Chris Museum, I sat down with its creator, Nijar Abdul Musawir, an associate professor of fine arts at Southern Illinois University, to find out what exactly that link is.
The link is the contribution made to America by those individuals who were taken from their home in Africa and brought to America and put into slavery. And I'd say at this point, there's no such thing as an African slave. What it is an African put into slavery. And so what happened is that during slavery, Africans made things and created things that remind them of home. Even the shotgun house. Torah, who's known as a person who came on a slave ship, said that when he saw the shotgun house, it reminded him of Africa. So there was certain things that were happening in America that made them think about Africa. And the banjo or the string instrument was one of them. And Africa is well known for its string instruments, where some of them have one string all the way up to 21 strings.
Well, tell me about some of those instruments. What do they look like? What do they sound like?
Well, one of the great things about it, I listened to quite a bit of it when I was at the Smithsonian doing some research at the African Art Museum. And it depends on the instrument itself, because some of the instruments, you know, they made out of calabash wood, and then they have the leather skin, much like that we see today. And some of them look like harps, and they almost sound like some have a harp-like sound. And then you have those that look like the banjo or guitar that has another similar sound. Like, have you ever heard a cigar box guitar?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the older ones sound like that. But the newer ones, because of technology, they have a really more sophisticated and innovative sound because of technology. But nevertheless, the old ones still have great sounds. And it's interesting watching someone play with one string. You know, you hear the string, but it's way the pressure of the fingers, the movements of the fingers, and that gave it multiple sounds, not just one sound. If I was to compare it, I would compare it with maybe the violin, the fiddle, and other string instruments.
Well, how did the banjo find prominence in the U.S., especially in the American South? We're talking about slavery, as you mentioned before, but how did it go to the next level at that point?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because not only did they make string instruments, they also made drums. They made things to make sound. And during slavery, you know, they weren't allowed to have drums, and they really weren't allowed to do anything other than labor, or whatever they was told to do. And what happened is that some plantations allowed them to use during weddings. So when they allowed slaves to get married or have certain babies born, they allowed them to play those string instruments that they had created, as well as some drums. And so they was sing these songs, and they would just, you know, it became part of the religious activities of the slaves. And the banjo would be one of the instruments that they would, you know, reference. And it really didn't take hold until some white Southern businessmen decided to create their own banjo. And because banjo had been played basically by poor whites, knew more about the banjo than the white population. But it really didn't take hold as a commodity until they started marketing. And the question is, why would they market the banjo? And I think they did it because they knew the banjo was a very important contribution to America. Why? President Thomas Jefferson stated that one of the greatest contributions Africa made to America was the banjo, because the banjo brought a great amount of pleasure as an instrument, but also it also became a commodity. And so when they decided to market it, and this is a trip, when they decided to market, they attacked the character of the African string instrument, which we know is the banjo in America, as though it was not sophisticated enough or elevated enough to be considered, that it was really just garbage. They even said that, we're going to create a more sophisticated, more elevated, more unique banjo. Not that disgusting, you know, crude, you know, unsophisticated banjo, the African banjo, as they refer to it. found some of these ads when I was at the Warner M. Robbins Library at the African Museum. And I'm looking at these ads. I'm like, wow. I mean, they just straight up had a strong marketing strategy to attack the African string instrument, but at the same time, imitated, create a banjo that they can claim as their own. And so, also, another thing is they also took opportunity to market it to the minstrel shows, to white artists, to white banjo players who had to put on black faces if they was going to perform, you see. And so that's a sad commentary because, according to some of the things that I read, little notes, it appears that they wanted to play the banjo. They wanted to be a musical artist, but the only way they can make a livelihood is they do the blackface.
Well, let's talk about the exhibition. What can people expect from it?
I think people are going to be really pleased with the fact that they're able to look at something that connects them both to America and also to Africa. There's this connection between what is here and what is there. I'm hoping that they get from the show is that the idea of sustainability, the idea of preserving, what seems to be very simple, to understand the complexities of it. And so when I went about creating these pieces, I used improvisation. I used different types of wood because they're constructed out of wood. And there's no hierarchy, meaning I created oak, cherry wood, walnut. No, some of that wood is in the piece, but you also use plywood, raw tree material. And I just respond to the aesthetic composition of the African string instruments and its relationship to the banjo. But then I look at this African string instrument and look at some of the composition and pull it into the banjo. And then also I did appeal to certain African aesthetics when it comes to mask making, textile patterns and things like that in a very loose and abstract way. There are small pieces, there are huge pieces. And I have four large pieces. And I actually, the four large pieces, blue, green, red, yellow. The blue is the Atlantic Ocean. The green is the plantation. The red is the revolt, and the yellow is we standing under the sun. And so what I did was that I used that color to actually show a timeline of the banjo. So the Atlantic one that says the Atlantic Ocean piece is a very large piece with one banjo sitting in the middle, looking like a slave ship moving in this huge blue space. And below the horizon line, you see a lot of burlap movement, loose burlap, dark blue. That's the bodies that were thrown over in the water. Not only that, slaves who died as a result, those who were put into slavery, those Africans who had died, been forced into slavery, but even white who was on the ship got sick and they threw their body over in the ocean. And so here it is that the banjo survived that. It became an object of survival once they got to America by playing it, by having that connection to Africa.
That was Nijar Abdul-Musawir, an associate professor of fine arts at Southern Illinois University, talking with me about the link between the banjo and African string instruments for his new exhibition, Reconstructed, Reconceptualized, at the Chris Museum. To hear the stories from today, visit krcu.org or go to iTunes to hear this podcast. I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. Join me Friday nights at 6 and Sundays at 3 for KRCU's Going Public.